If your morning starts with snap, crackle, pop, and it's not your cereal, call Joint Relief Institute for fast-lasting joint pain relief. And yes, it's covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000.
This week, the Rascals give you their top three Trump moments. You know, those I can't believe he still said that moments. Also, they talk about the $400 million ransom and the editorial about Blago's penalty.
Today is Friday. It's August 5th, 2016. I'm John Williams. This is the Mincing Rascals weekly roundtable podcast, which you can hear broadcast in part on my Saturday show on WGN Radio, Saturdays at 1:30.
I'm Steve Bertrand, the host of the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
And I'm Kristen McQuarrie, a member of the Chicago Tribune editorial board.
I did something I haven't done in a long time, you guys, this week. I took a mental sort of health holiday. Mm-hmm. I was at the radio station. I was set to go on the air in a couple of hours. I had done some pre-production, and I found myself getting a little dizzy. I've had a cold, and I thought, you know, maybe I'm not well. But I got to tell you, I think I had a case of Trumpitis, and it was probably complicated with a little Hillaria, which is kind of a ringing in the ear and an upset stomach that you get after talking about the election for, I don't know, a year now. Have you guys suffered from that at all? Have you had any of those symptoms?
I've been taking a little bit of a social media break because I'm just overwhelmed. You can't pivot without someone wanting to talk about the presidential race and Trump. And so wherever I go, I get asked about it. And I'm kind of maxing out. Yes.
Still sick, very sick, unable to walk away.
Yeah. Well, my wife is actually on the road this week, Steve, and she was driving away. I said, hey, here's your laptop. Do you want to take it with you, or her iPad? And she goes, no, I'm not going to. I actually think I'm going to just stay off it for a day or two and give myself a break.
Yeah, but I've been home more than usual, and so I keep turning on the TV to see what the latest is, and it's just the same thing over and over and over, but I can't quite look away.
I know. My laptop is beckoning. I know if I open it up, I'll be rewarded with some just amazing jaw-dropping story. And so I want to go there, but I know it's almost not healthy.
It's like eating that extra donut, though, because I never feel very good afterwards.
I know. That's not satisfying. Well, we did have something that was unique this week. Donald Trump said, okay, I was wrong. He was touting all week long, or for a few days anyway, the fact that he had seen the video of the $400 million transfer from the Obama administration, from the United States, to the government of Iran. It was described in stories as cash on pallets. But anyway, there were people getting off a plane. There was a duffel bag. And he said, it's clear that this is Iran's government releasing the video to embarrass us, showing them getting $400 million. And the big story maybe today, Steve, is that Trump said, well, actually, that wasn't the video after all.
Ish. The tweet from him this morning was, the plane I saw on television was the hostage plane in Geneva, Switzerland, not the plane carrying $400 million in cash going to Iran.
Are we getting sidetracked, though, with inserting Trump into this, when in fact this is a really weird story, and the White House is not denying that, yes, they flew pallets of different types of currency because Iran has been so frozen out of the global economy, and yes, we gave Iran $400 million,
and that's just the first installment, right, Kristen?
We knew we were going to give them that money, right? I mean, that was part of the deal.
Well, if you believe what the White House is saying, this is part of a 1978. Payment that we owe them because we kept some of their money during the revolution. Really? Are we buying that? That just sounds totally screwy to me in the midst of Iran already violating the nuclear agreement. There are several reports out, one from some German intelligence officials, that, you know, Iran has no intention of meeting the terms of that agreement.
Okay, let me put it a different way. You tell me, because you know more about it than I do, but the way I heard it was, we have this deal, and part of this deal was we were going to free up money of theirs that we've been holding, and that was part of the deal. And so this money that was given months ago was widely reported to be part of the Iran nuclear deal. All you saw was the actual, well, you didn't see it, I guess, but was the actual handoff of what was very publicly agreed to. I mean, the question is when the timing. I mean, it came on the same day that the hostages were released. But as far as the money,
but they're violating. They're already violating the terms of the deal. They're already violating it. Their nuclear program, and I'm citing some sources that are think tanks, international groups, people who used to be on the ground inspecting, doing weapons inspections there. They're already trying to buy products from different countries, including Germany, that they are not supposed to do without approval from us. They're not meeting the terms of the agreement, and yet we're shipping $400 million, dropping it in our lap in cash. We shipped, right?
This was earlier this year, months and months ago when the deal.
But, I mean, she's right about the nuts and bolts of it, Steve, right? I mean, literally, we're handing them francs or euros and United States $100 bills so that they can do whatever they want with it. And you've got to believe we're actually paying for terrorism as a result of that. And that's unsettling.
Okay, but that's the argument about the Iran deal. That's not an argument about the $400 million. That's a bigger argument about the deal. Part of it was that we freed up money, their money.
It's their money. This
that
is
that we had been holding as sanctions.
The Shah of Iran was buying airplanes from us. They paid for the planes. Then they took our people hostage. Then we didn't give them the planes. So eventually we had either given planes or the money back. This was an international tribunal that decided this, and it's taken 30 years to do. And when we realized that the interest payment and penalty on that was going to be maybe $10 billion, we negotiated it down to under $2 billion. And here is the first $400 million payment. The United States is in a weird position. Do we play by the rules and pay the money back that we owe or not? And we have decided to do so. The thing that's flabbergasting to me is that we decided to make the payment on the day that the hostages were released. And so if it's not a quid pro quo, it almost doesn't matter. It so looks like one, it might as well be one.
Well, I heard an ambassador say, and he may be an apologist for Obama and the administration, I don't know. He said, look, from what I know, we clearly didn't want it to happen. The U.S. did not want it to happen this way.
Yeah.
The Iranians did. The
sure.
Iranians wanted it to look like it was money for hostages. The U.S. probably tried to fight that, argue against it, and failed.
Go ahead, Kristen.
No, you go ahead.
No, I'd rather hear you.
Okay, I'll go ahead.
It just feels like a clown show. I mean, really? Are we buying all of this? Are we that naive?
What do you have? What can't you believe?
I mean, the story about us
owing the $400 million is, I don't know what's hard to understand about that.
Well, I guess I'm unclear as to why we would have included a $400 million payment from the 1970s as part of the original deal, and why we would be delivering on that promise when 1 year into the deal, two credible and timely intelligence reports are showing that Iran has no intention.
When did those reports come out, Kristen?
I'm reading one. I believe this just came out within the last week.
Okay, but the payment was made in the wintertime.
Well,
that's the point I'm trying to make. The
January.
Payment.
I don't think from the second they didn't even sign the deal. First of all, Iran never even signed the deal. And yes, you are hearing from someone who was very skeptical of the deal in the first place, and all the touting that they've stopped the Iranian nuclear proliferation. It's just not true.
There hasn't been one yet.
Well,
that was a little joke.
So German
yeah,
officials
shame,
have
shame on you,
reported
Steve.
In a recent intelligence report that the Institute for Science and International Security has learned that Iran's Atomic Energy Organization recently made an attempt to purchase tons of controlled carbon fiber from that country. And then it goes on to explain what that would be used for and how, they're not honoring the terms of the agreement. So,
okay, but I think, Kristen, we're arguing two different things. If they are violating it, then the Obama administration says there are mechanisms to look into that and sanctions to thwart that. That's one thing that's going on now. But the $400 million payment was something made over the winter time when this deal kicked in. So they're kind of two different things.
When this deal, meaning when the international
Iran nuclear
tribunal.
Deal, right.
Well, but pardon me, Steve, aren't these parallel tracks? There was one team that was working on this settlement with Iran that goes back three decades, and then there's the more recent problem of the Iran nuclear accord. But those, obviously it's the same country. I'm sure the administration had their hand in both, but those were really separate investigations or processes that began at completely different times. I mean, the one goes back to 1980, for crying out loud. That's not necessarily directly tied to the Iran nuclear deal, as I understand it. I hate to reduce this to something political, but aren't you guys just a little amazed that we allowed, I mean, somebody knew at the White House that the money was going to be transferred on pallets. It sounds so cloak and dagger, doesn't it? We're going to give them pallets of cash on the same day that the hostages are released. Kristen, when I cut you off a minute ago, I was just going to mention that Eric Zorn and I were trading notes about that, and I said the Republicans maybe can't run a campaign, but the Democrats can't run a country. That was an exaggeration of my view, but on the same day that, you know, a lot of crazy things were happening, I thought, how in the world could you guys screw this up? How do you release the money the same day as the hostages? That looks like ransom. And it feels like ransom to them. You almost wonder if it doesn't jeopardize us even more, because obviously you can. If you get hostages or do something terrible, you can get the United States to pay. That's what it looks like.
Oh, and just, you know, delivered in whatever currency you choose. You can get some euros. You can get some cash. You can get some Canadian
20s.
Money.
Yeah,
you can get
right.
some pesos. Like, however you want it, divvied up, and we'll fly it directly to you.
Well, it was Iran's money in the first place, and it was, you know, part of a
thing.
Negotiated
that's
deal.
The, so, that's the hell of it.
I mean, as another guy I saw, like I said, all I've been doing is watching TV. But someone said, you know, only Donald Trump could say giving someone back their own money is paying a ransom.
Well, I'd like to see a deeper dive on exactly what we think we are paying them back for. I'm not just going to repeat White House talking points that this was from this, you know, I haven't seen a deep enough dive as to why we actually owe them and why we would honor it with all of the times we have had to sanction them over the years. Why we're delivering on that promise.
Fair enough. Let's go to the political scene then for a minute, because it is about that video that Donald Trump said over and over again. You can tell that the government of Iran has released this video to embarrass us, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It wasn't the same video. The video he was looking at was of the hostages being released. There weren't any pallets of cash. Donald Trump should precede some of his statements with "what if," because he presented it as fact and did so for 2 days. In fact, I started to make a list of some of the most jaw-dropping things that Trump has said since he began running for office, and that one doesn't even make my top seven. I asked you guys to come up with your top three. This sounds kind of silly, but in a way, it's not, because he is saying these things almost always with a straight face, right? This week, what did he say? That the elections were rigged, or was that last week? He called Hillary Clinton the devil. I'm trying to think of something else that popped this week besides his mislabeling that video.
Steve, well, we're still dealing with the fallout from the Khan family, and he talked about how he had sacrificed too. I think that, you
right.
know,
mm-hmm.
That was a Sunday interview, right? And so was the Purple Heart this week or last week?
Guy gave him
this
the Purple Heart, and he
week?
Said, gosh, I've always wanted one of these.
And
nobody wants
was
a Purple
easy,
Heart.
And
yeah.
this was easier.
You know, I don't think it's easy to be interviewed by George Stephanopoulos. Go on any of these shows, and you have to know what the right answer to the question is in real time right now. And if you're not a practiced politician, you haven't done this. So, for instance, if you guys were sitting there, and you know that every word you say is going to be microanalyzed, and I said, if your sister or daughter were being sexually harassed at work, what would she do or what should happen?
Go get quick. Another job?
Quick, what's the answer to that? And you may just, you know, get defensive and say, well, my sister is strong and she would fight back. She wouldn't put up with that. She'd hit the door, Jack. Oh, wait, crap, that's the wrong answer. That's the wrong answer. But that's the answer that Eric Trump gave this week. And I'll bet he knows better. I think that's just showing somebody who's not very practiced in this political art of answering those kinds of questions on the couch.
Well, didn't Donald Trump also say that he thought that she would go get another job?
Yeah, well, maybe I'm putting.
Eric spoke to it too, but I think those were Donald Trump's words as well.
And what is the correct answer to that question?
That she would go to the authorities and she would fight it, to say that you're going to upend your career and go find another job because someone is assaulting you or abusing you. That makes you the victim. That's a terrible answer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what are your lists of the top three most offensive things that he has said?
I'll go first. Number three, in reverse order, religious test for Muslims. Number two, I'd like to hear his wife say something. That's the Kaiser Khan comment. Number one, I wrote Ted Cruz's dad may have had a connection to the JFK assassination, but then I crossed that out and put, after the Orlando nightclub attack, he tweeted, appreciate the congrats for being right on radical terrorism. But then I crossed that out and put in the picture he tweeted of him eating a taco bowl from the Trump Tower after he'd said something unfortunate about Mexicans.
No, it was Cinco de Mayo.
It was Cinco.
And so he was saying, I love the Hispanics. See, we have the greatest taco bowls at Trump Tower.
Kristen, what are yours?
I mean, that I just think is just like so, it just, you have to laugh or you'll cry. I'll figure out the laugh cry. So third, I'm stealing from Kristen Decker. She passed around a list and she should jump in here too. But he tweeted out something about how Hillary Clinton, you know, couldn't please her husband and made a reference to that's why, you know, he cheated on her. That's so ignorant. I can't even begin.
If she can't please her husband, how can she please the country?
Yes,
or something,
along those lines.
Satisfied.
Right. And then during his announcement speech, when he literally it came out of his mouth, you know, Mexicans are sending over rapists. That's number two. Number one, the thing that the visual of him that keeps focusing on is when he mocked the disabled reporter from the New York Times. And that to me was just so egregious. And I did a little research on it and looked at this reporter. And in fact, the reporter does have a muscular disorder where his right arm is kind of curled up, almost like if you had bad arthritis and you were in your 90s or something. And then they did know each other. And he had interviewed Trump numerous times, and Trump lied about that. And the way he mocked him was clearly, you know, he was making fun of his disability. And it just, I just that one is really painful for me.
That's your number two?
That's number one.
That's your number one. Yeah. How about you, Mr. Bertrand?
I think my number one is the Muslim ban. And in mine are the ones I think that will, in the end, do him in. You know, and I think anyone who looks at that Muslim ban shows that it sort of conveys a fundamental misunderstanding of this country, not just what it stands for, but the laws of this country. I mean, I don't know how to say it any more clearly than that. The second one, which I think will cost him greatly, is the Purple Heart comment, because he was doing well, I think, among military men and women. And for him to take a Purple Heart from someone who was injured defending this country and insist that it was the original Purple Heart when the man who gave it to him told him that it was a copy 5 minutes earlier, A. B, to say, I've always wanted a Purple Heart, this way is easier, I think will be damning for a lot of people.
That's disrespectful to veterans, that's for sure.
Well, it's like, someone gave me one. It's so much nicer than being shot. You
Tammy
know?
Duckworth.
Yes, I was just going to read that out. Go
the
ahead.
Best response by tweeting a picture of herself with the Purple Heart in a hospital bed saying, this is how you get a Purple Heart, nothing easy about it.
Right, and I just think that really is going to hurt him among people who were still supporting him. I really do. I mean, the Khan thing opened the door for it, but this just stuck the knife in deeper. He did it himself. I think that's it. And then number three was just one that came this week. It's not really a big gaffe, but when he said again that he's not ready to endorse Paul Ryan, I think that's going to damage him with Republican politicians who show that no matter what Ryan does or others do, he is still thin skin, short memory, and he's not going to play ball with them. And I think that's going to hurt him too.
Kristen, I saw a video of an ad that the Clinton campaign has mocking showing Donald Trump mocking the New York Times reporter. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was inappropriate too, because ultimately that's them perpetuating the, you know, mockery of the reporter. I think they should not do that. I understand the temptation, but there's enough low-hanging fruit. I wish they had. You know, this is my ongoing
harangue.
This
is the one with the kids? The one with the kids?
No, this is the one where they show Donald Trump acting palsied like that reporter does.
Yeah, but the kids are watching on TV.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I've been saying for a few weeks that I don't want to see the Clintons go there, and I think that's kind of going there. If that's such a repulsive act that Trump did, then stop replaying it on my TV.
He did it at a rally. It's so out there, and are the Clintons going to go there? Absolutely. How do you not? I mean, it's one of those things everyone can relate to, that sort of a slam.
Yeah.
And they just, they did it in almost, I don't want to say a tasteful way, but, you know, that's the commercial that says, kids are watching. This is what kids are watching. And
I think that's actually a narrative that's really ringing true, because I've had conversations with friends that are Muslim, and my friend's four-year-old came home from a play date and said, Mom, somebody, you know, my friend told me on the playground that Donald Trump's going to send us away. And, like, that's a conversation my friend had to have with her four-year-old.
Seriously?
So,
The editing on that commercial as well, it's upsetting. Is, you know, when he talks about, I could shoot someone, I think, on Fifth Avenue and wouldn't lose votes, he raises his hand. And the way that it's the camera is held, it's almost as if he's raising his hand outside the TV to a child who's watching. And then they move away from that. But there's like an instant of that, which I don't know if anything goes too far. Maybe that's it, John. I don't think the disable moment is too far.
I'm going to segue now to local or state politics. Next week, Rod Blagojevich will have, he's not going to appear, maybe via video, right, Kristen? But a judge will review Blago's sentencing, and if some of the counts against him, maybe five of them, are going to be thrown out or dismissed or something like that? Am I right about that?
There were four counts that already have been dropped by an appellate court based on a technicality, which you mentioned that editorial when we were off air. We wrote an editorial that I think is in today's print edition. So it's not that they found him somehow innocent of the other five charges. It was a technicality. But yes, because of that, he will be resentenced. And the judge has the option to reduce his sentence. It's the same judge who sentenced him to 14 years. And so I don't think the likelihood is very high. But there's, of course, a lot of intrigue. And you know, it's just he does have a lot of supporters who believe, based on all of the political corruption that we see in the city, he got a raw deal.
Where are you on that? 14 years. 14 years.
Yeah. You know what? At the time, I really thought it was appropriate, because if you get beyond the selling of the Senate seat issue, he was leveraging state resources to raise money for his campaign. He wasn't going to build a road until he got a contribution from the road builders. He wasn't going to help out Lurie Children's Hospital until he got a $50,000 contribution from one of the executives there. That is exactly what George Ryan did. It's the reason George Ryan went to prison. And so I really felt that, you know, there needed to have the hammer thrown. Since then, listening to Blagojevich's brother talk a little bit more about the case, and I haven't read his book completely, but it does have this feeling of, you know, he had to carry the water for all political corruption. I don't know that that was necessarily fair.
Hmm. How about you, Steve? What do you think about all of that?
Probably close to Kristen. I mean, he did and has done nothing to, create any sympathy from me, the way he behaved. And you know, I had a bizarre interview with him.
yes,
I think
you did.
Was it after his first trial, or you know, and in the things he was saying to me, and he thought the recording was off, and it wasn't, and the way he spoke about people.
I was there, Steve. I remember that.
You were there, yeah.
Yes. And he went on for like 20 minutes.
I know. And the terms he used about people, specific people, and you know, talking to me, I barely knew the guy. It was bizarre. It was odd. So 14's probably too long, but you know, he brought it on himself.
Well, the editorial towards the end said something about, well, it might be difficult to peg specific damage on specific individuals. I mean, why did you go to jail for 14 years? Whose leg did you break? Whose bank did you crush? It's this sort of continued distrust we have of politicians. And that really does start to matter at some point. And Blago would be center stage on that. And so if this is the message we send to maybe the next governors, you know, you can't do this or you're going to go to jail for a long time, maybe Blago has to be the fall guy for all of that.
Yeah, I think that's what happened. And, I mean, you have to remember, too, he was tried twice. You know, the feds couldn't get him the first time around. And I've always been a little bit suspicious of, you know, why they went to such lengths to try him again and, you know, go for a 14-year sentence. The federal government and the power of the federal government makes me cautious and nervous. And there is a part of me that feels that he was not wronged, but maybe the sentence is too tough.
the last thing I just want to bring up, as we're recording this, Chicago Police Department has released the videos of a shooting that took place. Paul O'Neill, 18 years old, stole a Jaguar in the Bolingbrook area, led cops on a high-speed chase. It ended in south side of Chicago, a couple of cop cars rammed. He gets out and runs. The police shot at his vehicle as he drove by, but then they also shot him dead, apparently in the back. Literally, as we were recording this, the video has come up. So maybe we don't have anything profound to say about it yet, and will next week. But does anybody have any reactions to yet another video story? What should we at least note about this, Kristen or Steve?
I would just point out real quickly that so this occurred, I believe, on July 28th. And we are already seeing the video, which does show that maybe IPRA, the agency that oversees police misconduct, has learned its lesson. They're not trying to bury the video. It's actually they're just publicly putting it out there. That's all I'd want to say at this point because I haven't seen it.
Yeah. How about you, Steve? You have looked at some of the video.
I've looked at some of the video, but I mean, not enough to really comment on it or digest it. But I think that's the case. What Kristen says, we're in a completely different spot now where these things are being, we're ripping the Band-Aid off rather than allowing the wound to fester, which is probably a good thing. Next, we need to get rid of the wounds.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, I was tempted to say, and when the police say stop, stop. And those are, there's the intersection, right, of the behavior of the suspects or the guilty and then what the cops do. Those are two different things, aren't they? Even though I should cooperate with the police more and I didn't, should you have shot me in the back as I was running away and I'm unarmed? And I think we're going to have another one of those conversations again and again and again, and this will be one of them probably. And so that's where we are today. We'll wrap it up here saying thanks to, we haven't done our recommendations. Steve, you've been doing nothing but lounging around eating bonbons. Let's start with you. Something you've seen, read, watched, or consumed lately. What's your recommendation?
Let's go straight to TV, Netflix. There's a series called Love, which I think it's been around for a while. But I did not know that it's a Judd Apatow series along with Paul Rust, who I wasn't aware of. Leslie Arfin is in it as well, but Paul Rust is this. He looks like a young John Williams, John. You got to watch this show. The guy just makes me laugh. It's quirky. It's off color. It's just these characters in Los Angeles, but I just love seeing this guy, Paul Rust, on the screen. He cracks me up every time I see him.
Paul Rust. How about you, Kristen McQuarrie? What are you digesting these days?
There was an op-ed that we ran in the Tribune by Dana Perino, who was a former spokesperson for George Bush, and she talks about George W. And how he would visit injured soldiers, and she relates this all to how crass Trump's comments were about Khan. It's worth a read. It's really she talks about how he had to stand there and take the wrath of soldiers whom he sent to war, who are then lying in hospital beds with their arms and legs blown off. But he did it because it was the right thing to do, and he understood what actual sacrifice is. So read that.
If you want to know a little bit more about the Olympics going into it, maybe you're listening to this mid-games, but get last Sunday's New York Times Sunday Magazine. It was a special section or supplement to the New York Times on the games, and it was really, really good. The story about Katie Ledecky, who is maybe the Michael Phelps of the women's side in swimming, was just fascinating, and I'm totally into the games. Are you watching and waiting with bated breath, Stephen, Kristen? Are you into the games?
I'm not yet.
Yeah, I'm really beaten down by all the bad news about it. You know.
I know. So. Well, that's and I think it'll be good, Steve. You watch.
It always is.
It always is. You're right. We so latch on. You'd think there'd be bodies piled up in the street from the Zika virus or the bad plumbing they have there, and actually, there'll be pretty venues with beautiful people joyfully dancing and running and throwing. I think it'll be pretty swell.
However, Kristen, I don't give a care about the opening ceremonies.
Why?
Because they're stupid.
Oh my! After was it Japan who actually used like a cloud separator to make sure that it didn't rain? I mean, after that, now I do. Nobody can top that.
And China's opening ceremonies, you know, you can say what you want about, constricting people or making them do stuff. But, wow, if you do, you can sure put on a good show.
I think it was China. They actually used, like, satellite technology to make sure it didn't rain. It was, I'm not joking, it was phenomenal.
I know. You can't watch the opening of the Olympics and say, okay, however frivolous this is, look what humanity can do. Wow.
Yes, I agree.
So labor camps, look what labor camps can do for us.
All right, that wraps it up. Kristen McQuarrie, I know your family is... Did you get a dog, or are you going to get a dog?
We are dog searching, so if you...
Hold off until next week.
Okay, we will.
And we'll make our recommendations. If you want a couple of wiener dogs, I got them. You can have, I can get them on a bus by the end of this podcast.
I didn't have a... I'm not thinking wiener dog, but... We'll talk about it next week.
No one ever is until they get one, Kristen.
Yeah, I wasn't either, trust me. And that concludes this week's Mincing Rascals. Thank you very much, Steve Bertrand. You sound great. It's good to have you back.
Thank you,
Kristen.
John
McQuarrie from the Chicago Tribune. Eric Zorn is somewhere pounding a dashboard listening to this. He expects to join us again in a week or so. Thanks to Bob Ferguson, who engineers the Mincing Rascals, and Kristen Decker, thanks for chiming in. Our producer will drop another pod on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. You can also listen online on the WGN Plus app or WGNplus.com. The Mincing Rascals podcast is a presentation of the WGN Plus podcast network. You can also catch highlights every Saturday from 1:30 to 2 p.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.